Last week, we talked about biblical parenting, and the week before, we touched on gentle parenting, and then we built up to biblical parenting. And this week, I just want to continue with the topic because I felt the prompting of the Holy Spirit to just keep pouring to you more about the topic of gentle parenting and around the issues of gentle parenting. And I just want to quickly recap on what we touched on last week on biblical parenting. One of the things that we touched on was love, discipline, provision, protection, and guidance. So how did we touch on those things? We said the aspects of biblical parenting or the principles of biblical parenting embody these qualities of love. It's driven by love primarily, and then it's also encompassed by discipline. There must be discipline, there must be provision, and there must be protection and guidance. And then we also touched on the fact that the best benchmark and the only true and the only real benchmark that we can ever use for parenting is God. And so we looked at God as a father, and we highlighted the fact that both the qualities of a mother and a father are in God, and that God has then separated men and women and given some of his qualities as a parent to both. But then we look at God as a father because in the Bible, we are taught that God is a father. Jesus says, when you pray, say, our Father. And then he says, I do nothing except that which my Father does. Excuse me. Now, I want us to also look at what God as a father gives. He gives us life, he gives us identity, and then he gives us purpose. And within that, we also have guidance and boundaries. And within that, we have freedom, the freedom to enjoy life, the freedom to enjoy the relationship. And God also embodies authority. And I want to now zoom into some qualities or some principles. Maybe let me say, put it this way. There is a principle that I want us to look at tonight as we engage in this conversation. If you have some thoughts to share around this, please feel free to drop us a WhatsApp on our WhatsApp line 071-364-0376. 071-364-0376. Here's the principle of protection. If we as parents have the responsibility to protect our children, in particular fathers protecting children, who protects the boy child? Who protects the boy child from molestation? Who protects the boy child from child trafficking? Who protects the boy child from abuse? And who protects the boy child from being wounded? Who protects the wounded boy child who has now become an adult? And who protects the father who lives with the wounded boy child in him? These are things that we need to think about when we look at biblical parenting, but also when we look at our responsibilities as parents in protecting our children. Who protects children? Who protects the boy child? Who protects the father from the boy child within himself who rebels against everything that triggers him because he has not healed? If a father gives life, as I've shared before in my recap, if a father gives life, if he gives identity, if he gives purpose, authority to a child, who gave the boy child in him all of those virtues? If a father is a guide to a child, who guides the boy within him? the father to love and protect the boy child he is raising. So we are now looking at this person who is supposed to be a parent. We are looking at this person who is supposed to be a father. And we make, or we often make the assumption that simply because this person, this man is dressed in a suit, this man is well articulated, he is able to articulate himself very well. He is a leader. He's a captain of industry. And he looks tough. He looks buff. Then we assume that there is no wound inside of him. And so we ignore what is inside of him. We ignore the triggers that we see that point to the boy child in him who was not loved as a boy child. He had a father who did not love him the way he needed to be loved. But nobody talks about that, and nobody will acknowledge that this man needs to be loved. Nobody acknowledges that this man needs love. But beyond that, that this man lives with a boy child inside of himself who is wounded. How do we then reconcile ourselves with the fact that we have men walking around with these bodies that are big, with these bodies that look like masculine men, with these bodies that look like well put together men, but in actual fact, deep inside, there's a wounded boy child. There's a wounded boy child who was not protected, who was not loved, whose father rejected him, whose father told him never to speak about his emotions because he is a sissy when he does that. Nobody talks about the generational pain that has been passed on to the man that we look at today. And he doesn't have a father. Who heals, who helps this boy to heal from the pain of rejection? One day he came to his father after life had just scratched him. He had a girlfriend, and the girlfriend broke up with him, or the girlfriend chose another boy other than him. And then he felt rejected, so he went to daddy, hoping that when daddy sees him walking towards him, feeling rejected, with his shoulders slouched, with his head down, and with him holding his tears in his eyes, that maybe daddy would just bring him closer, hug him, and say, "What's wrong, my son?" Instead, daddy shouted, "Come on! What's wrong with you? Lift up your head, walk tall. Don't be moping around. It's time for you to just get back to work. Come, do this," started pointing him to doing chores. And initially, he wanted to say, "Daddy, but I'm hurt. Can you just give me 5 minutes?" But daddy wouldn't. And the more he looked up, the more daddy said, "Keep going. I'm not interested in your tears. I'm not interested in your pain." And so he learns from his father that, hey, your emotions don't matter. And then he grows up, probably meets another girlfriend when he's much older, and he's thinking, okay, now I'm better able to handle myself. And then he thinks, well, let me just have that moment of vulnerability where I can just share my emotions with this person that I love. And then she says to him, "You're such a complainer. You're so sensitive. It's so unmanly of you." And so he learns again that even in the context of a relationship, he cannot express himself. And then he goes and then he becomes friends with some guys and buddies, and he's there, they're enjoying themselves. He pays attention to the topics, because nobody wants to bring that topic about the heart. And so they all talk about sports, cars, they talk about politics, they talk about everything else except what really hurts them. And then you see a group of men standing together, and then you think, hey, those men, so macho. But when you look into the heart, it's just a group of boys. It's just a group of wounded boys who are afraid to be vulnerable with each other, because they were taught, suck it up, let's move. Life will not wait for you to cry. Life will not wait for you while you mope around, while you feel sorry for yourself. And so let's get going. And so he becomes a father. And when he becomes a father, he learns that this is how to raise a boy child. He gets to have a girl child, but he really doesn't know how to relate with this girl child. And so he allows the mother to be there. But because he doesn't want the boy child to be a sissy, because he was told that a boy who's sensitive is a sissy, then he brings the boy child closer and is hard on him. And when he is hard on him, he thinks he's doing the right thing, but all he's doing is just carrying the pain. But nobody talks to his heart. Nobody takes the time to check on the wounded boy inside of him. And so he keeps it in, and he keeps passing on that pain. He thinks he's disciplining his son when he's actually punishing, because punishment is when there's lack of love in the thing and there's lack of purpose. But discipline is when there is love and there's mercy, that when you've said as a father that I'm going to give you 10 strokes, and you're on stroke 2 and your son says, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And then you think, but I haven't even gotten to the third one. You must learn to take it like a man. And that becomes punishment. And that becomes abuse. Because then there's no longer love. There's no longer purpose. There's no longer mercy. But how then do we move from there? How do we then... I can hear that man on the other end saying, hey, Zibusa, I hear you talking about the boy child. I hear you about the wounded boy child, and I live with that wounded boy child. What do I do? Firstly, acknowledge that you're wounded. Acknowledge the pain that you're feeling. Validate it. It is valid. You've gone through the pain. You've experienced it. It hurt. And you're hurting. And you can feel it right now as I'm talking to you, that there's that child in you who is hurt. And as we know, hurt people hurt. And when you are bleeding on other people. Because you don't know how to not bleed on others. Because that blood gushing out of you is gushing on others, and you think it's okay. I hear that man saying, I've been in church for so long, but I've never heard anyone talk about how to heal the boy child inside of me. How do I do that? How do you do that as a wounded boy child living in a man's body, who's expected to be functional? I'm glad you asked, because the answer to that question is very simple. But in it lies a lot of work that still needs to be done. How you do that is simple. Go to God. God is the source. If you go to God as the Father. Because remember, if your example, if your benchmark for a father throughout your life has always been a corrupted version of a father in a man, you are unlikely to relate to God as a perfect father. And therefore, what you then need to do is start learning who God is outside of that comparison to your earthly father and to any other earthly father, because God is a perfect father. And if you learn that God is a perfect father and you start to want to see how he is a perfect father, I invite you to read the book of Genesis. How God introduces himself to Abram and then gives him a promise of a son. And then Abram sees the passing of time and then he thinks, it's never going to happen. Look, I'm old. My wife is old. I hear you. Maybe you meant it's going to happen another way. But God said, it is through your seed that's going to come out of your body, Abram. But in order for you to believe what I tell you, I'm going to change your name to Abraham, father of many nations. And when you become father of many nations, then it is going to come into your mind that I am going to keep my promise. And so God keeps his promise with Abraham. And God keeps his promise through Isaac, the son of the promise. And God keeps his promise through Jacob, whom he names Israel. And lo and behold, you and I are Israel today. And so here we find ourselves learning from God that he is a perfect father because he keeps his promises. When the children of Israel are exiting Egypt and they're going into the promised land, but then they start in the wilderness, God provides for them. He gives them something that they've never eaten before, and they don't even know what this thing is, that they call it manna. But God faithfully provided for them because he's a father. He took them out and he provided for them. Eventually, he leads them into the promised land, but a different generation. He kept his promise that those who disobeyed him, and this is another aspect about God, he does discipline. He keeps his word. If he has said it, believe it. And so, as that wounded young boy living in a man's body, you then start to see the pattern of God keeping his promise in the Old Testament. But then when you get to the New Testament, you start seeing this father who is loved by his son, that his son does whatever he sees the father does. And then you look at the son and then you think, but I am a son too, and I need an example. And so you stay with Jesus. Jesus becomes your friend, your buddy. You say, Jesus, but how do I become that son to a father? How do I embrace the spirit of sonship? And then Jesus says, do what I have commanded you. And then learn who the Father is. Go to him. Go to him. Because when you go to him, he's going to say to you, ask anything in my son's name and I will give you. And that's how you then start to learn that this is a reliable father. This is a good, good father. This is a perfect father. And this is a father who keeps his promise. But when you go back, When you read the New Testament and you get to the proverb, or the parable rather, of the prodigal son, you see how this ungrateful son in the proverb demanded his inheritance. But inheritance is something that you get when your father or your parents have died. But the father was still alive and the son demanded his portion. And so the father gave, because the father loves. He gave him, he plundered that inheritance, and then he comes back all impoverished, having spent time eating with pigs. And then he comes home, he says, I'm just going to ask my father to be a slave. And the father sees him from afar. And the father runs to him. So I want to say to you tonight that God is waiting for you to turn to him with your pain. And when you turn to him with your pain, he is waiting with his arms wide open. He's coming to run to you. He is running to you. And he wants to embrace you. And when he embraces you with love. And he restores you. So if we as fathers, as earthly fathers, have failed in our responsibility to protect our children and our sons and our daughters, who do they turn to? They turn to Abba Father. They turn to God, because it is God who is going to heal them. It is God who is going to heal you, because we as parents are imperfect. We as parents will always be imperfect. But for as long as we stay in the will of the Father, as long as we stay with God, he will keep us. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. My friend, run to the Father.